Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we are going to be doing the State of the Ultimate Universe. Marvel's Ultimate Universe is coming to an end in 2026. We're going to have a miniseries called Ultimate Endgame that, as we are taping this, is going to be premiering in stores on December 31st, next week. So coming at you very soon. So we thought this was a good opportunity, 2 years in.
Great time. Endgame. That's a good word, or compound word.
They should end use it for game. Some sort of movie or something like that.
Possibly. What's the game that we're ending is my question.
The Ultimate Universe game, and maybe the comics making money game. That's something that we're going to be talking about later.
That's also
in the
ending.
Podcast. Because there's been a lot of consternation and weirdness and discussion online about ending this blockbuster universe that has really been a best-selling line in as far as we know how much comic books sell. So we're going to talk down each of the titles individually, our thoughts
on them.
Or talk
them up, Alex. We're going to talk them up or down.
Could be either direction. Could be right or left. We honestly don't know.
And let me say, 2 years in is about the same time I check in on a lot of things in my life, like my kids, my finances. So it's a perfect time to
Do you
want to
continue
really...
with that is the big question. Yeah, like
exactly. Will it be back, my finances, in the new year? We shall see.
So we're going to talk down all of that. And I would just say for anybody who is watching on YouTube or listening on any of the podcast feeds, let us know what you're thinking about the Ultimate Universe. We want to hear from you. We want to hear what you think about it ending, whether it really is ending, which is a discussion we're going to get to probably at the end game of this particular podcast. But to jump back, let's talk through a little bit of the history here. I think it's worth a refresher about what happened leading into this. So lots of folks know this, but the original Ultimate Universe ran at Marvel from 2000 to 2015, ending with the event Secret Wars that ran there that destroyed all the universes with a little bit of an asterisk. And this was, in case you don't remember, a pretty big deal. In fact, you can draw a direct line from a lot of the ideas thrown out there in that original Ultimate Universe to the creation of the MCU. Obviously, Sam Jackson literally was Nick Fury in that universe, and that led to him being cast in the MCU. But a lot of the stuff, it isn't a direct one-to-one, but a lot of stuff in the Ultimates, the original version, was seen in the version of Avengers we see on screen. Ultimate Spider-Man certainly impacted the way they depicted Spider-Man on screen, and a lot of other elements were taken through there as well, from costumes to other ideas. But
and then you have just on that, like at the end of that, the bringing in of some characters into the main continuity, of course Miles Morales being the number one of them.
And there's a lot of ideas there, but it also fizzled out for a really long time. Like, even if we got Miles at the end there, great character, love Miles, there were a lot of titles that when I'm going through the bargain bins at a comic book store, I'm like, oh, I forgot that. Like, Jonathan Hickman wrote an Ultimate Hawkeye series. There was the whole Ultimate Iron Man thing from Orson Scott Card that I think people with memory hold. And many, many other titles that just went on too long. Like, there's frequent punching bags like Ultimates 3 and 4 that have their, shall we say, memorable moments. Maybe we can generously say that.
Great.
But it went on for a while, and I think that's something we're jumping to the end here, but like I think that's something that they were trying to combat when they were talking about bringing it back. Now, they were trying to bring it back for a good long while. There were various teases about the Ultimate Universe returning, particularly around Miles Morales. There was Spider-Men 2, which brought together Peter Parker and Miles Morales by Brian Michael Bendis. There was the end of that miniseries teased the potential return of the Ultimate Universe. Also, Donny Cates intended to follow through on this big time. He seeded The Maker, and just to briefly talk about the history of The Maker, this is the Reed Richards from the original Ultimate Universe who went bad, got scarred, put on a weird helmet, and became a straight-up bad guy. He came back during Donny Cates' run on Venom and a couple of other titles and teased that The Maker's whole plan was to return to the Ultimate Universe, create an army, and attack the main Marvel Universe. That changed at some point where Donny Cates was, he had laid out this whole plan, reportedly, to bring back the Ultimate Universe, just how Marvel did. And then, very unfortunately, Donny got in a big car accident. He seems to be doing better now, which is great. But those plans were, of course, put on hold. And instead, Jonathan Hickman came in and essentially started from scratch. I think used some of Kate's ideas, but not all of them, to build his own version of the new Ultimate Universe with a bunch of other writers and artists and, of course, Marvel editorial. That all kicked off with Ultimate Invasion, which was a four-issue miniseries from Hickman and Brian Hitch.
Before we jump in, I want to talk a little bit about The Maker, another of the most interesting characters, I think, to come out of all of this. Because it was a really slow progression. I was talking to a friend of the show, Nat Towson, about this, because he was going back to reread sort of the evolution of the Reed Richards from Ultimate Fantastic Four, who was a regular hero. Like, it was not that different from the main continuity Reed Richards. And then you saw him put on the helmet, and slowly the progression of him starting to become more of this Doom-adjacent type villain. But smarter, I think, is the real takeaway. And how in the Ultimate line, it waffled. It made him a bit of a villain, then he sort of came back a little bit. And it made him more of a villain, and he came back a little bit. Finally landing, I think, like you're saying, with Donny Cates sort of cementing him as the villain in the main continuity. And now I feel like Miles and The Maker are the big wins. And it's so rare that you see them willing, any comic company, any editorial, willing to fully turn a hero into a hard villain like they did with The Maker. So as you're just about to talk about Invasion, which makes him sort of the main character of this new Ultimate line, I think that's first off to be commended to commit to that.
Yeah, and what's interesting about him, at least my take on it, is he is a Reed Richards who is devoid of morality and family, the two things that keep Reed grounded. Because we've seen time and again in the comics, Reed can spiral out of control and be like, oh, I did this thing that kind of destroyed a couple of universes or whatever. Don't worry about it too much. And then everybody else in the Fantastic Four is like, Reed, what are you doing? Calm down, get some sleep. The Maker doesn't have that. Like, he is completely divorced from that. And that is what makes him evil. And that's what leads us into Ultimate Invasion, where the end result there, again, it's from Jonathan Hickman and Brian Hitch. It found The Maker battling the main Marvel universe and ultimately creating a new Ultimate Universe, which is designated, and this only matters to nerds. We are nerds.
That's us.
616. Woo! I called this out. Earth 6160. The original Ultimate Universe was Earth 1610, because they're obsessed with 616. But yes,
that feels, I was just going to say, that feels like, okay, how does the universal numbering work if it's just like, yeah, throw a zero on the end? No numbers work that way.
No, they don't. I mean, the main purpose here is to tell nerds this is a different universe than the original Ultimate Universe that spawned Miles Morales and The Maker, though they kind of push back on that a little bit with a miniseries that we're going to talk about a little later on called Ultimate Spider-Man Incursion. But regardless, the point being that, like, this is a fresh start. This is not the Ultimate Universe, you know. This is a new Ultimate Universe. We're not going to go back to that original Ultimate Universe. We're starting clean-ish here. And the main thing that The Maker did was he went back in time and changed history to his liking. So he changed the history of heroes. He changed the history of villains so that he is the ruler of the world. Again, so he can make it, in his estimation, a perfect world. He creates this Maker's Council that is, again, made up of some characters that we know in a very different context who rule different basic fiefdoms throughout the world. Some of them are delineated by, like, North America, South America, but it breaks up in different ways. At the end of this, however, one of the big things that happens is he is defeated and trapped inside of essentially a time bubble called the City that is locked for 24 months. Time moves faster in the City, so the Maker has, I believe, thousands of years to plan his revenge when he's going to come back. But you have this ticking time bomb, this time clock that's counting down 24 months, right from the beginning of Ultimate Universe number one, which is a one-shot that establishes the universe and the ongoing line itself. And something that wasn't readily apparent but did become pretty clear a couple of months in is this is set in a pseudo-real-time format that some titles stick to closer than others, I would say, and maybe that's a point of discussion we could have throughout here, where as we have these 24 months, as a title is released in January, that takes place in January. Then the next month, they've skipped forward a month, and now it takes place in February, then March, so forth and so on, which moves us closer and closer to the Maker returning, eventually in Ultimate Endgame. So that's the setup there. Justin, you want to add
I was going to say, like, that's the second thing I want to really commend this new Ultimate Universe for, is that the timing, the real-time formation of the stories, because it, man, did it work. I didn't expect it to be such a big deal. I was like, oh, what a fun little gimmick. But especially in titles like Ultimate Spider-Man is the best at it, I think. But and the Ultimates, the month-to-month clock just kept me dialed in, and it slowly ratcheted up the pressure on both the characters in the story as they're getting preparing to meet the Maker, and just the meta idea of reading this comic, be like, they have to do more now. We have to get to the thing because they only have it's not like we can add an arc in here or be like, you know what, let's just throw in a fill-in to follow this one little thread. No, we're counting down. The train is running. We have to keep it on time. And man, was that effective. And what a difference maker compared to the main universe and then even some of the larger crossovers happening in the DC universe that are great, but this was a difference maker, and it really worked.
Well, and I'd also, I don't actually know the answer to this behind the scenes, but I have to imagine there are two things that really helped with the writing there. One, that real-time format, like you're saying, gives a pressure to the writers to be like, we only have this capsule to tell this story we want to tell. Like you touched on, we can't screw around. We can't go like too many side trips. It all has to be important. The other thing that I'll laud Marvel for here, and I'm sure if it didn't work, they would have bailed immediately, but like giving a 24-issue or 24-ish issue, you know, Ultimate Wolverine is only going for 16. It was also only supposed to go for 12 originally. But like giving a commitment there is something we talk about a lot, particularly in modern comics. You just don't get. Like you get maybe 5 issues and that's it. And if that doesn't work, like that title is completely gone.
It's crazy because like a 6-issue series became 5 for a lot of titles. And then a 4 became 3. Like look at Age of Revelation with those 3-issue, all the tie-ins. And it's like 3 issues. What are we doing here? It's basically it's an extended one shot. It's like an annual plus is what we're allowing people. So to give these, like you're saying, a full 24 issues. And, you know, we're only really talking about Ultimate Spider-Man and the Ultimates in the mainline title, because you have Ultimate X-Men that's a little bit off to the side doing its own thing.
Well, yes, I do want to talk about the overall line, but one other like very technical thing that I want to mention, I was rereading a bunch of the titles, which we'll get to in a second, to prepare for this podcast. And I had kind of memory hold or forgotten or just not noticed, they all have extra page length as well. Mm. Like the mainline comics are 20 pages usually, sometimes shorter. Sometimes they're like 18 pages at this point, and it's getting fleshed out with ads. These are definitely 20 plus. Some of them are like 24, 25, 26, 27. So that gives them a little extra room to tell the story as well. And I think that just intrinsically affects what you can do, the pace of the storytelling too. we talk a lot, not, I don't want to spend too much time comparing Absolute Universe and Ultimate Universe, but we spent a lot of time on our Stack podcast talking about with Absolute Universe and generally with DC, the investment that DC has given artistically into the books that they're doing and giving them enough time. And I think that's the same thing here. This is why I bring up the page count and just an overall thought about the Ultimate line. I think it pays off in varying degrees here, but there's an investment in the writing. There's an investment in the art that I do think pays off with readers. It's not, it doesn't feel like just pumping out product, be like, here's more donuts. You're stuffing into Homer's mouth in hell or anything like that.
That's, you know, the analogy I use when I'm comparing, you know, anything.
I think about that all the time. That scene from The Simpsons where Homer is in hell and it's just like the conveyor belt of donuts or punishing
and he's
you.
Happy.
He's happy. He's happy. That's comic book fan.
That's us. Yeah.
It's us.
More.
But it doesn't feel like that. Like, it is, of course, but, like, it feels like saying, okay, we're going to step back and try to create a package that is good for the writing and art perspective, that we give a little more room for the storytelling, that we have real thought on the themes put into it and what we're saying. That leads to better comics, and it's not just on a monthly basis, but also what they've been talking about with the end here is these are hopefully going to live on bookshelves forever. You know, this is not something that we're like, yeah, we did it for 2 years and we're done. It's, no, 5 years, 10 years from now, people will hopefully still reread the Ultimate Universe. So, yeah.
Just. Well, I was going to say the comparison to the Absolute Universe is very apt, because also the core premise here is basically the same. It's like this universe is darker. It's a villain has left their mark on it, has changed things, and the heroes come at their heroism in a completely different way. Some heroes are villains. Some are just darkened their experience. Their origin is different. So, like, the fact that they're coming out at the same time with similar results in some ways and different results in other ways. Like, what it feels like Absolute is a bigger hit or a bigger, it's leaving a bigger mark on the main DC universe. While the Ultimate line is still a hit, especially Ultimate Spider-Man, I think has been, people are really taking it in. But why do you think they're having, with such similar premises, having different effects on the rest of the market?
Well, I think that it just comes down to the varying quality. And I think all of these titles, for the most part, are good. There's a couple of exceptions we may talk about later. But I think they have sparked in different ways for people where, depending on the strength of the concept, like, we will jump into specifically Ultimate Spider-Man in a second. But I think, like, that has the strongest take. And some of the other takes aren't quite as strong. They also aren't necessarily pushing their own path and following their own path. The concept of the Absolute Universe feels a little clearer as explicated by the different writers, very specifically. Like, the artists, I'm not...
You're talking about the individual character books, you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying that, like, it seems like the... You know what the Absolute Universe is, and that it's iterated in very different ways, in Absolute Batman, Absolute Superman, Absolute Wonder Woman, all the way down the line. With the Ultimate line, it's, yes, the maker did this thing, and there are a couple of titles I want to talk about in particular that are kind of like off doing their own thing, and I think that's fine, but it's a little harder to pin down how is this a cohesive line, when with Absolute Universe, you can kind of tell, like, there's a connective fiber there, even when they're very disparate, that feels running through it. It feels like it has that sense that we want as comic book fans of, like, oh, you gotta read them all to get the story, even when Absolute Wonder Woman has literally nothing to do with Absolute Batman. Here, you probably don't. You can kind of pick and choose what you want.
And I think I agree with you that line-wide, Absolute, it's like big swing, you gotta read this. While these, the big swing is there for some of them, but others, it's a smaller swing, and it doesn't feel like they're all shooting off in a wildly creative direction. It feels like, and we'll talk about this more, but like some of the books, Absolute Black, or Ultimate Black Panther, for instance, feels like it could just be a Black Panther story in the main line. So it doesn't have as much, like, oh man, this is so different. But I also think that the ultimate, the fact that Ultimate has come before, this is a reboot, while Absolute is, and it's a first shot at this, that I think is maybe helping Absolute feel different and special. Mm-hmm. While this is like, oh yeah, they're doing Ultimates again. Because I would argue Ultimate Spider-Man and the Ultimates and Ultimate Wolverine and Ultimate X-Men as well are huge creative swings that go very hard on these characters and are, I think fans are like, yes, but they're not getting that crossover appeal the same way that Absolute is, because they just don't feel different enough. You can find another title that has Ultimate Wolverine on it in the world.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, we're getting too much into Absolute versus Ultimate, but I don't think there's any way to not talk about it. I think there's also the genesis of the two things is surprisingly similar, but different at the same time. Like the fact that they started with an event that split into just the mainline DC universe, which had this tightly woven story that was laying over what was going on with the nascent Absolute universe at the same time. And we knew, ooh, they're going to come crashing together at some point. There is that excitement there versus the way the Ultimate Universe started. Just to start off, I'm remembering our discussions when we were talking about Ultimate Invasion and Ultimate Universe of like, this is fun, but what are we doing here? What is this? What is going on exactly? So when the titles came out, I think they were already starting with a little bit of a handicap where you're like, I don't know if this is going to quite work. And then it does. So you kind of work up to there versus Absolute Universe. It was like, we're hitting the ground running. There is same sort of like timer of Darkseid is going to come back. The Maker is going to come back.
Yeah.
But the timer felt more pressing with Absolute Universe than here. And
that's so interesting because this universe has an actual timer.
I know. Like
there's a clock. There's a clock literally ticking.
Yeah. But I don't know. This all comes down to vibes and feelings and who knows what actually is right. Why don't we, if it's all right with you, actually, I want to ask one more question. Like, we've kind of been talking around this, but this is jumping to the conclusion here. But like, how successful do you think the Ultimate Universe is? Like, line wide, broad strokes, good, bad, somewhere in between. What's your overall take before we talk about individual titles?
It's somewhere in between because across the line, it's just inconsistent across the line, I think. But like the highs are super high. Mm-hmm. I love, I would say half of about the titles we're going to talk about, I think are excellent. And they're a little bit more exciting than some of the other, their comparison titles in the main continuity. So that's a win. Like, I consider this, it's been swept under the rug, the Absolute rug, a little bit, but I think this is a win. I think the sales are pretty strong for it, so I think it's a win for Marvel as well. But creatively, I am going to be sad when some of these titles are over, which presumably is happening right now.
Imminently, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page here. I think we're probably even on the same page in terms of the titles that we think are big
wins. I bet we are.
Probably are. But at the same time, and this is jumping to the end as well, I think it's actually good that Marvel is
It's called Endgame, Alex. It's the Endgame. Yes. And that is across the world. Like, anytime you say end, you throw a game on there.
100%. It comes from Riverdale. Riverdale invented Endgame. And then it's just kind of seeped into society from there. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen to Riverdale After Dark for more on that. Why don't we...
Wow. Surprise ad right there.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Why don't we jump in and talk about the individual titles? This is first out of the gate is Ultimate Spider-Man, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Marco Cecchetto. I just want to note, and this is not to slag off any artists, I'm going to mention the main artist for the title. There have been plenty of fill-ins that have done great jobs. Like, I will shout out David Mesita has been sort of the regular fill-in artist for Ultimate Spider-Man, though there have been others. But the basic concept here is we've got a older bearded Spider-Man in his mid-30s. He's been kind of aimless. He's married to Mary Jane. He's got two kids. Uncle Ben is alive and
naturally
a newspaper man, along with J. Jonah Jameson. And into that, he is given the Spider-Man costume and powers by Iron Lad, who has these things called origin boxes. We didn't find out the name initially, but we find them out later.
Later we did.
Who he's trying to restart the universe in anticipation of the Maker coming back. So that's how Spider-Man gets his powers. So very different origin. What do you think about this one, Justin? How are you feeling about this title? And I'll note, for all of these, again, as we're taping this before December 31st, Ultimate Endgame. So, like, there's still a couple of issues to go on pretty much everything.
Yeah. I think this is amazing. This is a great flagship. It takes, you know, the biggest character at Marvel, arguably, and it puts them in a very different place. The thoroughness with which Hickman really thought out how he wanted this to play out is excellent, I feel like. What does a Peter Parker look like who comes to Spider-Man a little bit older? He's a little bit, you know, less confident, I would say, at doing it and coming into this world, much more connected with family because he has one, as opposed to teenage Peter Parker who didn't when he got the spider bite. Uncle Ben, the idea of twinning J. Jonah Jameson and Uncle Ben, which Hickman does here, is so weird. It works, but I was like, oh, you're putting sort of the J. Jonah Jameson being somewhat of a father figure to Peter throughout his history, with Uncle Ben, his like iconic father figure, sort of making them same. They're like a duo act in this comic where we never really hear much from either of them separately. Mm-hmm. They're a brain trust running in this newspaper, which feels also much more, it's much more a political idea. Like, there's very little commentary on Spider-Man from them, which I thought for sure was going to be a major factor in this book, and it's just not. So, like, really surprising stuff. And the way that this title expands into a massive ensemble of characters, getting super creative with what Mysterio is in this Ultimate Universe, with what Green Goblin is in this Ultimate Universe, is great. It's such a like creative breath of fresh air in the Spider-Man canon.
My two big thoughts that I want to add on to that, and I also do really love this title, is, first of all, this isn't a huge surprise since Jonathan Hickman created the universe, but I think this is the most successful at hitting the concept. You've got the characters who at their base look the same and are the same, but they are in different circumstances, so make different choices and end up in different places in their lives because of them.
Yeah.
Like, we're not getting any radical, bold reinventions of, here's this character, but they're an entirely different person for some reason. It's Peter Parker is still Peter Parker, and Mary Jane is still Mary Jane, but they're in different places. So that's great. And that creates a lot of drama just because you know what they should be and what you hope they would be, and you're hoping they get there, but some of them just don't, or some of them go in different directions. I think one of the biggest changes that is one of the smartest changes is making Harry Osborn, Green Goblin, basically partners and equal to Spider-Man in this title. And that heroic tension there of, will Harry go bad? What will happen to Harry? Will Spider-Man go bad? What will happen to him is really interesting. Following the kids is really interesting as well. The thing that's so fascinating about this book is the least most important character most of the time is Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Peter, like you were saying, he's sort of a disaffected millennial. Am I getting the generation right for his age group?
I think that's right, yeah.
Sure.
He's written a little bit more like Gen X, but I think he's meant to be a millennial. Like, yeah, he's a millennial.
Like, his sort of aimless, like, God, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life thing, yeah, is seeps through into everything, but it allows all the other characters to move to the forefront and actually make active choices when he's letting everybody choose for himself. And I think that's really accurate to the generational experience, even yeah, if it makes it sometimes a frustrating read to be like, Spider-Man, do something. It's called Ultimate Spider-Man. Come on.
Well, because, but I would argue that I think Richard Parker, their mm-hmm, son, has been the one that has filled in and become the most like the original Spider-Man, which I think is great. I've really liked him, and he's in a Venom outfit, essentially, a symbiote. He and his relationship with the Black Cat, I was like, oh, okay. I don't know how mm-hmm, he was able to weave these ideas together, if he discovered them over the course of writing it, because it feels very natural, the organic, the progression here, or if he was like, the son's going to be like the original Peter Parker, because it just flows so naturally. And I like where, because that's what's happening right now in the title, is Richard Parker is with Black Cat is in the Kingpin's lair, basically, mm-hmm, in the last couple issues, getting about to be like busted. So that's been really effective for me, and a character that I hope we get to see more of with what comes out of this universe. I will say it's also interesting with the Maker being the uber villain here. So much time has been given to Kingpin, mm-hmm, and Mr. Negative, and sort of the more street level villains for Spider-Man, and they're the big bad of this title, the standalone title, mm-hmm, in a way that I did not expect either.
Yeah, I agree. And that's another thing that I think is interesting about this line is Ultimates, which we'll get to in a second, is the one that's sort of like carrying the flag to be like, hey, the Maker's coming. We got to do something about the Maker. Ultimate Spider-Man, that's in the background. That's something they're working on and they're aware of. Particularly the Mysterios, I believe, are very aware of that. Yeah. Kingpin mentions it a lot. So it's always omnipresent. But yeah, it's a different focus. It's a different danger. It's a different thing they're facing, and I like that quite a bit. Speaking of the danger, the other thing that I think is really successful about this title is the cliffhangers and twists. This definitely has some of the best last pages we've read over the past 2 years, where it just literally like screaming out loud of, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. And then the other thing that it does well, and I think we mentioned this earlier, is it does the real-time format better than anybody else, except for the last couple of issues that like have completely ditched it for no particular reason, which is kind of funny. But having that month gap where you pick up and like, oh my God, a month worth of things have happened to these characters between. So they're in an entirely different place than that cliffhanger ending we left them on the last page, is so smart and fascinating. I would love to crawl inside Jonathan Hickman's brain and know how he plans that out. Like, I'll just mention this many, many years ago, but I was at his house and he has just shelves filled with notebooks and binders of things that he's planning. So I have to imagine he's basically written at least some of all the material that takes place between the 24 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man.
He's the maker. The last thing I want to highlight here is if you've been jonesing for some Peter Parker, Mary Jane relationship stuff, I'm speaking specifically to our number one fan, our co-host Pete LePage. This is the title to really see. We get to see them, not a ton over the course of it, but some really nice relationship mm-hmm. moments between them, especially when they're in, is it the Savage Land? They're in a Savage Land-like place for an arc, and they have to be on the run after that, and their relationship really pops there.
Well, let me ask you about this. There's been a lot of fans who have come out and said, hey, make this the main Spider-Man because he's with Mary Jane and that's what we want. What do you think about that?
No. Like, you can't just throw away. Like, there's a story happening in the main universe. Is Peter Parker meant to be with Mary Jane? Your answer may vary, but, like, right now the story's not telling that. And if you want to read that, there's hundreds of issues of them having, getting together, dating, being in a relationship, being married. And some of that stuff is excellent. Just go back and reread that because they have a full life that you could check out. Mm-hmm. Wow. Like, cause what I'm more interested in is not a find replace of Peter and Mary Jane being together. If they're meant to be back together, I want to see that. I want to see them date. I want to see that slow relationship, because that's what romance is. It's not being like, you're together now, make a baby. It's like, I want to see them fall in love.
It could be.
You're right. It could be.
Yeah.
I for one, welcome the genetic pods that will be put in.
Before we wrap up Ultimate Spider-Man, there was one more thing I wanted to mention that kind of leaks into our next title, Ultimate Black Panther. And this is more an overall conversation. But one of the things that I was reading is Jonathan Hickman was inspired, at least in part, by the depiction of Peter B. Parker, I think it is, from Into the Spider-Verse, where he is older and he's a dad, and he thought, hey, wouldn't that be a cool thing we've never seen in comics before? Or at least, I think we did kind of see it with Mayday Parker, Spider-Girl, but in a different way, for sure. This being partially inspired by the movies, and then Ultimate Black Panther, Brian Hill, who's the writer there, said he was inspired by the Black Panther movies. It is an interesting flip to me that we really won't know how it turns out for like 10 or 20 years, but the idea that the original Ultimate Universe was the groundwork that inspired and helped kick off the MCU, that we have this second Ultimate Universe is taking its direction from the movies and from the MCU. I don't know. Just culturally, I wonder how that all nuts out in a couple of decades' time, but who knows?
Well, I mean, it's all doing the same thing, sort of. It's like, how can we distill these characters down so there's less continuity around them, is what the Ultimate line was doing. That's what the movies are doing. And now it's like, we're redoing the Ultimate. Like, what's something we can pull that makes this just a little simpler from number one, rather than being like, so there's this guy, and his name is Ben Reilly, and he's the clone of it. And you know what? Like, no one wants to start there.
Yeah. So anyway, we will see. Let's move on then and talk about Ultimate Black Panther. Like I mentioned, it's written by Brian Hill, art by Stefano Caselli. Now, the idea here is, I mean, there's a couple that are running through the series, but you got Black Panther in Wakanda. As you'd expect, T'Challa is king. He is married to Okoye, and enter Wakanda are two Moon Knights. I should have written them down, but I believe it's Ra and Khonshu who are attacking them. They are trying to take out Wakanda. Specifically, they are coming after Vibranium. And a big plot line that weaves throughout the series is that there is not just Vibranium. There's also this new substance that's sort of like an anti-Vibranium, where Vibranium is metal. This causes life and things to grow out of control. There's a bunch of other things that I do want to mention about the series, but the big thing that I should get out of the way is we read the first few issues of this, and the way, not to pull back the curtain, but we've talked about this before, but the way that we curate things on The Stack, our review podcast, is we tend to talk about all first issues. If we dig it or are interested in it, we move on to a second issue. But as soon as the conversation becomes exactly the same several issues in a row, I usually pull it out of The Stack because I just don't think that's interesting to our listeners. And then, frankly, you know, some of them I know individually we will go on and keep reading. Some of them they won't. Ultimate Black Panther is one of those, specifically because I think Pete would always be like, I love Black Panther, period. And then you and I would be like, I'm not sure how this is a different take from mainline Black Panther, even though it's a good Black Panther story. And that's kind of where we were leaving it at. So we fell off after about, I want to say, five or six issues.
Yeah.
I did, for the purposes of this podcast, go back and read the entire run thus far just to see, because I felt like, you know, I wasn't giving it a fair shake, and see how it rolled out. And I got to say, it read exactly how we characterized it. It still feels like it's something that could be running in the main Black Panther title, and I wouldn't bat an eye. But it reads much better as a whole as you're reading it through. The raw Khonshu stuff and Moon Knight stuff, I think, is very interesting. There's a Storm-Killmonger relationship that runs throughout here that I think is, there's cool, a lot of heat there. And frankly, while I was reading the book, I was like, I kind of wish we were focusing on this. Like, this is interesting. Storm and Killmonger as revolutionaries on the fringes of Wakandan society, fighting back and fighting, showing Black Panther the way things should be. That's interesting.
Yeah.
The thing There's also, which we completely missed because we fell off the title, there's an entirely new take on the Sorceress Supreme, this new character that seems tailor-made for cosplayers that I thought was pretty cool, but doesn't have too much necessarily to do with Stephen Strange. This title is also mostly unaffected by the Maker and the World Council. Like, they bring in the blurry-faced people that we met over in the Ultimates, who are agents of the Maker and agents of Nick Fury. So you get to see them a little bit, but like, it's pretty much charting its own path and doing its own thing, unaffected by anybody else. So that all said, I just monologued for a bit. Justin, what are your thoughts on it?
I mean, similar to you, I think, yes, this felt like it could be a great story that could be in main continuity with those, the differences being the parts that felt awesome. Like Storm Killmonger, it'd be hard to see, I don't know where that fits as a story, but like, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. And that also feels like an ultimate idea where it's like, hey, in a world that's a little more villainous, these two are pushing back from the outside. And that's great. That's a powerful duo. The only other thing I would say that I do think this title was a little bit hurt by the fact that at the same time, there was so much, hey, we have to get this cool new metal in the Marvel Universe between this Mysterium was happening over in the X line. And there's just such a glut of like, you know, what's adamantium? That's cool. You know, what's cooler? Insert another fun noun or adjective at the end. Mm-hmm. And we have to get this. So that felt a little like, we've been there before.
This is jumping back a little bit to something I just said, but it is weird reading this title, thinking about the Maker traveled back in time to destroy as many heroes and threats to his rule as possible, but left Wakanda untouched. Like that's just strange. And I think that's the essential flaw in this series, is that Wakanda is fine, Black Panther is fine, the legacy is that is fine. There's some other things that are changed, like the Moon Knights, and like we're talking about Storm and Killmonger, and the Sorceress Supreme. But I'm not quite sure why they kept that, even when that seems to fight back against the central premise of the Ultimate Universe. So, good Black Panther story. I was really struck by Stefano Caselli and Carlos Nieti's art.
Yeah,
they
great
feel
art.
Really good superhero art, feels reminiscent at times of Alan Davis, particularly in the later issues, which is pretty cool. I like Alan Davis. So I liked it better on second read, and I think it will collect very nicely, but not quite sure how it fits into the overall narrative. That's all.
Yeah.
Why don't we move on to, I would say, the biggest swing in the universe, Ultimate X-Men, written by Peach Momoko, also the art by Peach Momoko, and script adaptation by Zach Davison. This is another one that we fell off of after a couple of issues because our conversation came down to Peach Momoko's art is great.
Really great art.
Really great art, period. And really, this is one that, again, I went back and read the whole thing up until now, and you really got to read it that way because, like, the story is so clearly manga-inspired. Every issue is more like a manga chapter versus a whole issue, and I could not keep track of the characters month to month, particularly because we're reading so many things. Going back, reading it back to back, being able to track the story a lot better, it really does work, and I do appreciate the big swing, but this is one that is such a big swing that it almost feels like, is this in the Ultimate Universe? This is its own thing.
Well, it sort of rewrites the very basis of what being a mutant is for this universe, right? So, like, that is a crazy, like, that's why I felt like this should be its complete own thing. Mm-hmm. This should be separate from the Ultimate line and be on its own. And honestly, maybe this came from a pitch from Peach Momoko that was like, I want to do this. They were like, great. Wait a couple of months and you're going to be part of the Flash entitled the Ultimate Universe. Because I did enjoy it. And like we said, the art is amazing, but it feels both divorced from the Maker storyline, the line-wide story, as well as just something that I don't know how this is an ultimate take. This feels like a different take.
100%. And this is getting back to what we were saying about sort of like the overall direction of this, not to keep pitting this against the Absolute Universe, but like, it's hard to justify this versus, say, Ultimate Wolverine that we're going to talk about in a bit and how they both exist in the same universe. And I wish we had either gotten like, wildly diverse, very artistic takes on Marvel characters that don't necessarily fit together but are really interesting like this, or a cohesive line, but not both at the same time, because, again, like we're saying, I don't know how Ultimate X-Men squares up with Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimates and everything else. Just to break down by a bit of the story, by the way, we are set in Japan. It is very horror-infused. It's mostly focusing on the character of Armor, who has her mutant ability brought out after one of her friends kind of died by suicide, though there's a lot more to it, having to do with this cult called the Children of the Atom that is trying to create their own mutants using the blood of Akihiro, who I believe is Dokken, Wolverine's son, which, again, I don't know how that squares up with literally anything that's going on. But it's very inspired by Japanese folklore. There's shadow monsters. There's people crawling inside of bodies and crawling out. There's eyeballs exploding and other things. And you got some characters, you know, like Surge shows up here. Armor, as I mentioned, Nico Bitteru. We get a riff on Psylocke. But the riff on Psylocke is called Kanon instead of Quinon and seems much more connected to Psy, who I believe is this ninja version of Psylocke that is back in, like, Ninja Ronin times that Peach Momoko created. So, again, giving your thesis that, like, Peach Momoko kind of wanted to do this and then they made this an Ultimate title, I think that makes a lot of sense.
If anything, this should be, I would love to see this as a manga-style format collection.
100%.
Just came out. Like, do that.
Two other things that I want to throw out there that I was struck by, again, in terms of squaring up, how does this work with the whole world? There's characters like, she clearly has two characters that are clearly a riff on Rogue and Gambit, but are not called Rogue and Gambit. And then also, I believe Rogue and Gambit, like, exist over an Ultimate Wolverine. So that's weird to square up in your mind. But the thing that really works about it, is, particularly when you read it all as a chunk, is she really drives down on the essential idea of X-Men, of hated and feared by a world they're sworn to protect, but does it through a lens of something that we haven't really gotten from X-Men, even from, like, New Mutants or any of that, which is youth rebellion. Like, you're focusing on the kids versus adults very clearly, on kids versus authority, and then being like, hey, we're mutants, this is who we are, we exist, let us exist, and we will help you, and we will be there to save you and protect you. And that comes out a lot throughout the series in a really nice way. I think it's worth a read. I just, like we're saying, it's a weird fit with the Ultimate Universe, the overall plot.
Yeah.
All right, why don't we talk about one of your favorites, The Ultimates, written by Dennis Camp, art by Juan Fregeri. And the whole thing here is that Iron Lad, knowing what's going to go wrong, like we mentioned earlier, is trying to restart the heroes of the Ultimate Universe to try and save it and prepare for when the Maker is going to return. So the most clear clicking time countdown is happening in this title. We also get a lot of riffs on characters we know and love in very different ways. Some who just outright reject being the heroes, so new folks end up being the heroes instead. And there's also a very strong focus on political action and world outside of our window, which is something that Marvel was always about. Justin, what do you think about this one?
I mean, this title is the clearest in my memory to chart Dennis Camp's just rise as a comic book star. Like, he was just coming around, I think, when this title started, got put on the Ultimates, and at the same time, he's just become this big name and this writer that is making some awesome stuff all the way up to his upcoming Vertigo title. So, and I've been in the Dennis Camp camp for quite some time, so this was, like, so exciting. And then it really just paid off. Like, the format here is mostly standalone stories with a little bit of ligature running through, bringing that ticking clock headed toward this confrontation with the Maker. But one of the most effective characters in here, I think, is Doom, who weirdly in this is Reed Richards, who was tortured by the Maker. And this is where we really get to see the Maker be an absolute monster supervillain. Like, any of that, like, wavering, oh, he just needs to find love and family to be a hero again. No, he's an absolute monster here. And that makes this Reed Richards Doom, who's, like, severely damaged by what happened to him, such an intriguing character. And it's insanely confusing if you were to explain that, like, so what happened here is the maker, who's Reed Richards, tortured the Reed Richards from this universe that he created, who's also Reed Richards, to making him, taking him from being this family man to becoming a Dr. Doomsday character, which is his villain. But instead, he's actually becomes, takes that on and is afraid to be himself because he's so tortured by the Reed Richards, also known as the maker, from a separate Ultimate Universe. But that is also this Ultimate Universe, sort of, in a way, with a different, where the one in a different place than the zero is in this universe. So it's like one of those things where you're like, don't say that, just read the story. And it's very effective here. There's just, I love the Hawkeye character here. I love the way they bring She-Hulk in. Like you said, having some actual political satire and colonialism and all of that is commented on with this story that I thought was really good. Light touch, but still great and really makes you think coming out of it. Iron Lad is very good here as well, as sort of the polymath trying to do everything all at once to save the day. And this, I feel like, as Ultimate Spider-Man sort of went its own way, this is bearing the standard of the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. The only things that I'll add is not to get too negative. Not every issue of this book worked for me, but I always appreciated the swings, even if it didn't quite connect. But it also had some of the best single issues of the Ultimate Universe by far. Specifically, you mentioned Doom. The first issue that delves into his history with the Fantastic Four and what happened to him is, I think, probably the single best issue that came out of the Ultimate Universe, hands down, and even had a semi-sequel, which was really impressive as well. All this stuff is great. There's a driving force behind this book because it is, like you said, bearing the standard of the fight against the Maker, where it just amps up the pressure every single issue. So, great read. No pun intended on Reed Richards.
Great read, Richards.
Next up, we got Ultimate Wolverine. This is written by Chris Condon, art by Alessandro Capuccio. And the big idea here is that Wolverine is the Winter Soldier. He has been brainwashed by the Russian fiefdom, which is run by Omega Red, Colossus, and Magic. He is their brainwashed soldier who they send out to absolutely wreck shop. And slowly over the course of the book, he remembers his history and starts to remember himself, thanks to the mutant opposition who is in the territory and fighting against the Maker. And this is a lot of the characters you know and love from the X-Men books who are fighting back against all of them. And we do see them very specifically in different ways versus an Ultimate X-Men, which is weird, I would say. I will just throw that out there.
This is a title that I was like, I really love the beginning, and then in the middle it got a little lost in the sauce, I felt like, but man, did it come together in the last like 6 or 8 issues. I feel like it's the way they, I guess I shouldn't spoil too much here, but there's a relationship moment that happens at the last couple issues that I think is just so well done. One of my favorite things that's happened lately with Wolverine, or any Wolverine, I guess you could say. And on top of that, I think this one definitely shows the dark side of the Ultimate Universe effectively. The fact that it was extended, I think, is a testament to how popular this is and how people are just like wanting this other take.
I don't think, and this is nothing to say negative about it, we talked to Chris Condon a couple of times about this book, so go back and listen to the interviews and the feeds, but it's not the biggest, wildest swing in the Ultimate Universe, and I think part of that is it's very similar to like an Age of Apocalypse or any number of dark X-Men alternate timeline things that have happened over the various decades, where Wolverine is in a different situation and we get to see everybody in different situations, but the dark things that happen are so dark and so upsetting. If you like that sort of thing, which I certainly do, it works very, very effectively, and it works very effectively with Alessandro Capuccio's art. I also think it's really interesting that this was originally supposed to go 12 issues, and we just read the 12th issue. That wrapped it up really nicely, but Chris told us there are 4 more issues. Well, we know there's 4 more issues to go, but he said specifically he was talking to his editor about, why does Magic, Ileana Rasputin, look exactly the same in both universes? And that's something they're going to explore in the final 4 issues. I want to know. I'm interested.
When he said that in the interview, I was like, whoa, great take. Also, very like, it was so intimidating is the wrong word, but just like, whoa, oh no, is she evil? Like, it really took my breath away when he just said it in our interview as, like, the where we're moving for this last four-issue arc, which is really cool.
There are a couple of other things to talk about. Why don't we, this is the last series we can talk about since we haven't read Ultimate Endgame, but we got Ultimate Spider-Man Incursion, written by Dennis Gap and Cody Ziegler, art by Jonas Scharf. The idea here is that Miles Morales was given in the free comic book day special a business card by the maker trying to say to him, like, hey, I'm going to bring the Ultimate Universe back. You should come with me. We're the only two remaining people from there. Instead, Miles's little baby sister grabs the card and gets sucked into the Ultimate Universe. So Miles goes after her and goes on a tour of the Ultimate Universe. Each issue, he meets one of the other titles, basically. Like, he goes from Ultimate Spider-Man to Ultimate X-Men to etc. Creating some changes there. The lasting effects are he... sort of very offhandedly tells Doom, he's like, oh yeah, the maker's Reed Richards, you didn't know that? And then that completely sends Doom's world spinning off of its axis. He also takes a bunch of these origin boxes for no particular reason back to the main Marvel Universe, which is going to lead into the Armageddon event that is happening in the main Marvel Universe, later on this year. But otherwise, what'd you think about this series, Justin?
This one felt like a connect the dot that someone was like, okay, here's what needs to happen. And I was like, and then it was like, wait, what? Why? All of this doesn't, like, a magic business card and then him chasing. First off, stressful. He's got to find his sister in this universe. I was like, good luck.
And the first issue, I just want to mention the first issue was crazy to me because he's hanging out with Spider-Man. He's like, okay, let's just look in every window in New York. And
I was like, that's not an effective strategy.
No. There's a lot of windows.
So this whole title, I felt like just was like, wait, what? Definitely had my radar up of like, I'm not buying this 100%. But it did feel like the whole thing was built to just get these origin boxes back to 616. But I'm like, that's like the most red herring of all. Like, I'm like, what is this? Why is this so important? And we don't know yet, but it was one of those things where I was like, oh, this is something else. It felt like a free comic book day series, honestly.
Yeah. It just didn't connect. And it was such a bummer because I don't have anything necessarily against the creative team, but like you're saying, it felt like, oh, we should do this. You know, it's getting back to that initial conversation we had. It felt like content that they were throwing at us versus the specific artistic takes that are coming from the other titles that are more driven by what do we want to say about this thematically? This is what do we want to say about it plot-wise? And there are things that happened to Miles, and I think there were some interesting things that happened to the book. The relationship between Miles and Maystorm was interesting. It was kind of funny that I think it was in the last issue. They were both like, we have significant others and we'll never have a romantic relationship, period. And I was like, why are we even gonna let the sparks fly? It's okay.
Better sew it up.
Yeah.
He's like, we're from different worlds, literally. Well, mine's actually similar to this one, but slightly different. But now I live in a third world that is different, but I know a lot of the same people there.
Yes, it is exactly that explanation you're talking about and that you were talking about with Doom that leaks into here, that it's just... it was both not enough story and too much story at the same time, and too many characters being like, what are you doing here? Can you explain this? What's going on?
I think as opposed to the Doom stuff, where it was sort of shown but not overly told, this series was like, let me tell you this complicated ligature that connects all this, rather than just showing Miles just doing some cool stuff.
So that was a bit of a bummer. We had a couple of one-shots. I mentioned the free comic book day special, but we also had three other one-shots. We had Ultimate Universe 1 year in, Ultimate Universe 2 years in, and the Ultimate Hawkeye one-shot. Those all had very different focuses. The 1 year in one was all about Ultimate Nick Fury and how he is running the world, essentially, or maybe not. 2 years in focused on the Ultimate Guardians of the Galaxy and also introduced Ultimate Daredevil. Ultimate Hawkeye focused on the new Ultimate Hawkeye, Charlie Ramsey. I thought all of these were great, actually. What'd you think, Justin?
Yeah, I really enjoyed these. I would just highlight the the 1 year and 2 year in felt like they were like, here's just some fun stuff we also think about. And that's cool. But the Ultimate Hawkeye, I really liked it. It really highlighted the character, obviously, and told a great story while also just keeping the, it was like a piece right out of the Ultimates story where we got to really just follow the trail of a character we liked. And that was, that really, I really loved that.
Yeah, I'm glad they only did a couple of these, but honestly, I could have read more. I like getting back to the same thing we're hitting over and over, that there was a specific purpose for each of these, that there was a story they wanted to tell versus feeling like, oh, we got to, you know, do this thing that is assigned to this thing, like we're talking with Ultimate Spider-Man Incursion. But I could have read more character portrayals, particularly about the Ultimates characters. There's so many of them, and I feel like we barely know them, and we're getting to the end of the story. I would have loved more one-shots focused on them, but alas, it shall never happen.
Alas, indeed.
Or will it? Why don't we wrap up here by talking about the Endgame? Like we said, that's coming up. We haven't read it, but it is a 5-issue series. It's going to roll out once a month. As the other titles all end, Ultimate Wolverine is ending with issue number 16. The other Ultimate titles are all ending with 24. And the schedule got a little bit of a hiccup. Ultimate Spider-Man 24 was supposed to roll out the same day as Ultimate Endgame on December 31st. Instead, it's running 2 months late at this point. So that's going to come out in February. I have concerns about whether we're going to get spoilers for the end of Ultimate Spider-Man in Ultimate Endgame, when the answer is probably...
Well, the only thing is, like, it feels like that story is ending in a place that isn't expressly about confronting the Maker. Mm-hmm. It feels like that's more like, hey, we beat Kingpin, now let's go fight the big boss. So hopefully we'll just, that'll just be its own thing, and we won't get spoiled to, like, guess who died? Everyone but Spider-Man or whatever.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. And the other ones are going to be rolling out and ending over the past next couple of months. What do you think? What are you looking forward to? What are you interested in seeing in Ultimate Endgame?
Well, it feels like this is the end play. This has been planned from the beginning. So, like, that's great. Like, I think we talked about how great this was at its inception. The concept is strong, and so much of the storytelling has been great from the bigger titles. And this feels like they're going to just really nail it, I think. It's enough time to tell it. We don't have to follow a ton of tie-ins. It feels like it is really going to be self-contained and just a great story. It seems like we're not going to have to deal with origin boxes and all of that stuff, since that's feeding into a whole nother crossover over here. Mm-hmm. So great on that too, because that's my least favorite of the plot, the dangling plot devices. And I just want to see Maker come back and be the full villain that we've been able to really establish over the run of the Ultimates.
That's the big thing that I'm very curious about, because they really left a lot on the table in Ultimate Invasion all the way back at the beginning. I still think about that Brian Hitch battle of, I believe it was just like every single iteration of every single superhero all attacking at the same time.
Yeah.
So what else is going to happen? You know, what else is the Maker going to do? I'm excited to find out. Dennis Camp has no lack of big ideas, but we've also seen a lot of those hyper-evolved cities that have been closed for thousands of years thing, particularly in X-Men books.
The Vault.
In Marvel Comics. So, I don't know. I worry a little bit that it's like, yeah, okay, we're doing that again. But we'll see.
The only thing I would say there is, like, it may just mean it's different than we think. Like, it feels like if the original premise here was, like, the Maker was like, I'm going to eliminate heroes by not letting their origins happen. And then Tony Stark came through and was like, here's your origin. You're getting it late, but you're still a hero. You contain the possibility of this. And getting back to that core idea feels great. And I hope that's where we pay off, because it feels like this time in the city is almost like the Maker's second origin box. Like, what is he going to become in there? He could become a hero. He could become something else. The type of villain that he is after being locked away for thousands of years is going to be something that literally the sky's the limit. And I trust this team to find something that is going to truly catch us off guard. Like, if all of our heroes are waiting outside the city, like, all right, let's get him. And then I think it's going to be something very different than they and we expect. And that's the promise of that is excellent, I think.
Well, the big plot, if I remember correctly, is the Maker wanted time travel so he could go back in time and make like a couple of little adjustments, some tweaks that he felt like weren't quite right when the first time through. So that gets us into the final discussion here of, is it really ending? Obviously, we don't know. That's months away at this point. But like, there's a couple of possibilities, right? One is the entire universe is destroyed and that's it. That's kind of a sad bummer of an ending. Another one is they stop the Maker and things continue as they were and we get Ultimate Universe rebooted or whatever, and we continue with like Spider-Man, Peter Parker died, but Richard is now Spider-Man or whatever. Like, we get new riffs on that. That's a possibility. The other possibility is we really do get them putting things back the way they should be, and we get either Ultimate Universe 3.0 or Ultimate Universe 1.0 returned, potentially. And I don't know, but it given like Chekhov's time travel was set up at the beginning, I think that's got to pay off at the end. We've also got Kang, who likely is probably the later iteration of Iron Lad. That's something that I think is going to come out in Endgame as well.
Famously.
I'm sort of like 50-50 on the whole is it really ending thing, not to go back or call them out, but when we talked to Chris Condon right after they announced, yes, this is definitely ending, he was like, oh, is that what you think? Seemed like, all right,
telling.
Maybe very telling. But what do you think? Are they actually ending the Ultimate Universe?
I let me just say, I hope not. I think... this is a more cynical idea, but from a, like, looking at the whole world, like, we're about to get the movies that are about universes incursioning into each other, which is what the Ultimate Universe is sort of there for. There's a title with an incursion in it, Invasion, very present here. So I do think it makes sense to keep it around in some capacity, and maybe even... whatever their timeline is going to be, it might mirror what's going to happen in the upcoming movies in a way, just from it'll be different just from a premise point of view. If it is like, if what we think about the movie is that it's the Fantastic Four, like, protracted 60s vibe and is going to cross over with the main MCU universe, maybe we get some version of that here, and that would help with your time travel. And maybe it's about putting the Maker back as Reed Richards. And putting the Fantastic Four at the center of the Ultimate Universe makes a lot of editorial sense. I don't know if that's the story that was pitched years ago, because I do think that's what they're going to do. It's not like they're not as, you know, beholden to a fault. We often say, like, hey, Marvel and DC, make your comics like the movies because that's what people are seeing. And no one really does that. They make a gesture toward it, but there's never a full press to make it that way. Maybe they're finally doing that here to use the sales tool.
I was thinking about that a little bit, and this 100% will not happen. It will never happen. It absolutely won't. But just like putting together on a murder board a couple of crazy pieces, you end the Ultimate Universe and actually like end it. Like, that's done. So you do have that bookshelf living for years thing that we talked about. At the same time, they promised there's an event, Armageddon, that's happening in the mainline Marvel Universe that is going to be the most seismic change to Avengers ever. That's going to start in the summer and run all the way through Doomsday, Avengers Doomsday, probably like in December when that's coming out. We've also at the same time had a lot more coordination between Marvel Studios and Marvel Comics, to the point that they're publishing a quarterly Fantastic Four MCU comic that's going to be coming out next year. So if they were going to do something like that and like end the Marvel Universe, end the Ultimate Universe, reboot the whole thing in the MCU continuity, now would be the time to do it, particularly because one of the big complaints about the MCU is there are so many characters and so many TV shows and movies that have just been left by the wayside and not followed up in any way. That's the way you follow up on them, right? Like, you have Ironheart, but following up on the Ironheart series. You have Shang-Chi 2 isn't a movie, it's an ongoing comic book series. So I don't know. Again, I don't think that'll actually happen. And part of the reason I don't think that happened, not to get too businessy about it, is Marvel is currently pumping out like 30 to 40 comics a week on most weeks. And they're not going to be like, cool, let's tamp it down to 3. That's just not going to happen in any way. But I don't know. If we saw Ultimate Universe go away for like MCU, Marvel Cinematic Ultimate Universe, or something like that. That's not too far out of the realm of possibility. My point being that, like, just to wrap up, I think they will actually end this Ultimate Universe so they can have these issues on the bookshelf, but I think there will be, just for publishing needs, something else that comes after that and fill that gap in the line.
And I would love it to be a some version of Ultimates and Ultimate Spider-Man continuing on, because these are the characters that I think have the most forward momentum and the most universe. Like, I love Ultimate Wolverine 2, but that definitely feels like it's a story that is about to be like, well, we did kill everybody and now it's over. While the others, I feel like, are just still fully expanding, and I'd like to see more of that.
Conversely, though, the other thing that I'd add there is you need a plot. You need a theme. You need an idea, because the problem, going all the way back to the beginning of this podcast, with the original Ultimate Universe, is they just let it keep going, and it just started to, like, fizzle off into wild and annoying and terrible directions after a little while. So,
well, here's the only thing I would say there is the reason that did that is because it was like, how do we get even more edgy? And sure. I don't think you don't need to do that. You don't need to make anything more Ultimate. Just let it be Ultimate and tell good stories. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be like, here's the edgiest thing, because someone's going to go over the line, which I think is what happened in those original Ultimates.
But I also think it is a good thing to say, what is our 2-year plan for these titles? Like, what is the overarching story that we're telling? It doesn't have to be the same ticking time clock, but that does give it this direction of, okay, here's what we're saying over the course of this 12 issues, if they want to do, or 24 issues or whatever. That gives it a focus. It gives it a drive. And I don't know, whether it's a new Ultimate Universe, a new universe, or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
now we're talking.
Nobody wants
Star
that.
Bread. We will see. Any final thoughts, Justin? Anything else you want to throw out there about Ultimate Universe?
Stay ultimate. Live your own ultimate life, I say, at this time. This time, make 2026 your ultimate universe.
Oh, that's a really wonderful thought to end on. And for all of you out there, like I said at the beginning, let us know what you think about the Ultimate Universe titles. What do you like? What are you not so hot on? What do you think is going to happen in the future? Is it going to end or not? Let us know in the comments, or if you are on our Patreon, patreon.com/comicbookclub, you can chat in the Discord. We love talking about this sort of thing and arguing about it, and it is a lot of fun.
Please.
We do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We'd love to talk to you about comic books. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay ultimate.
And if you got an origin box for the holidays as a present, hold on to it. I think it's going to become, don't return it on Origin Boxing Day like everyone else does. Keep it.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.